The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Students of the Game. My name is Alex Bauman, and as always, I'm joined by Ray Oldenburg and Nathan Glidewell. Now let's jump straight into Triple A. The first story we have today is Brooklyn Nets guard Kyrie Irving has been suspended indefinitely by the team for his comments regarding his post that had a link to the anti-Semitic film. What do you think about Kyrie not taking responsibility for this as long as he did?
I think at the beginning, I don't think he understood what he was actually doing. I don't think he had any idea what kind of problems this could have caused and what kind of rules he was breaking right off the bat. And he didn't take responsibility early on. The first 2 weeks where this is happening, he didn't take responsibility. And the Nets and the NBA and Nike said, oh, we're going to take responsibility for you then. So, and then he had to issue an apology and all that. I just thought the whole situation was weird because I don't think he really understood what he was actually saying.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I really question, like, his mental stability. Obviously, he's had a lot of issues in the past few years, and, you know, this is, you know, blatant anti-Semitic stuff. Mm-hmm. It really baffles me that he would post that, And then for him to take so long to issue an apology. And, of course, like, the NBA handled it extremely well with, you know, what he had to do to come back. But it really, it's a scar on his life that he tweeted that.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, it took him a week to even apologize for it. He kept saying, you know, I can post whatever I want and all that. I just don't think he really handled this any well at all. So there's that. Yeah. Brooklyn Nets have fired their head coach, Steve Nash, following a 2-5 start to the season. Assistant coach Jock Vaughn will serve as the interim. Not a good week for the Nets at all.
No, not at all. And you see the firing, obviously, with that kind of talent on that team, you shouldn't start 2-5, no matter who you're playing against and no matter who's playing for you. I know the Ben Simmons struggling early on in the season, and this whole thing with Kyrie is kind of a mess. But let's talk about their coach that they are planning to hire, the suspended Emet Udoka from the Boston Celtics, guy who's suspended a few weeks before the season started for the the quote-unquote relationships with the Boston, you know, female staff or whatever. I think this is a very interesting move by the Nets.
Yeah, it still hasn't happened. I saw a report earlier today where people high up in that organization or around it are urging them not to even attempt to hire him.
Ooh.
Yeah, I mean, you go back to last year and you see the relationship between Steve Nash and, you know, these bigger star players like KD and James Harden and Kyrie Irving, and it's really, there's a disconnect. There was a huge disconnect there before, and it felt like he did not have control of the team. And obviously, in the offseason where KD wanted to be traded, there was not a good chemistry between Steve Nash and KD. So honestly, I thought this was, you know, a long time coming. I didn't think Steve Nash was the best option for the Brooklyn Nets head coaching job.
I completely agree. All right, the second story we have today is the Indianapolis Colts have fired head coach Frank Reich after a 3-5-1 start for the season. And former Colts center and current ESPN analyst Jeff Saturday has been named interim head coach. He was not on the staff at that point. He was an outside hire. What do y'all think about them firing Frank Reich and hiring Jeff Saturday?
Again, I think this is going back to the talent that you have on the Colts, just like Steve Nash with the Nets. You should be performing better than you should. I mean, they're last in the NFL in points per game. They're 27th in the NFL in yards per game. They're last in the NFL in yards per play. They're the bottom half of the NFL in a third down conversion rate. They're last in the NFL in touchdowns per game. I mean, you got to perform better. And I know injuries have really swarmed that team, you know, with Jonathan Taylor being out most of the year, but you've got to perform better, especially after going and getting a free agency quarterback like Matt Ryan this past offseason.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely, like, people have had expectations for how the Colts should have performed this year, especially coming off that season last year where they looked pretty dominant early on. And, you know, this season, obviously, you make the quarterback change with Matt Ryan. He hasn't looked the greatest, but you can't really blame it all on him. There are things you need to do as a head coach to propel your team over this hump, and he just didn't do it. Alex, what do you think?
I thought it was kind of quite funny that he tried to scapegoat his offensive coordinator, Marcus Brady, last week in firing him, even though Reich was still calling the plays for the offense. Obviously, it didn't work out for him as he got fired this week. Also kind of interested to see Jeff Saturday as a head interim head coach. He hasn't even had a head coaching experience above high school. He coached at Hebron Christian Academy in Georgia. So interesting to see how that works out.
Talk about going straight to the top right there.
I mean, considering on the Colts coaching staff right now, they had a former Jacksonville Jaguars head coach, Gus Bradley, and former Carolina Panthers and Chicago Bears head coach, John Fox. You know, you think they would
have interesting interim hire. Yeah.
Promoted one of them instead of hiring outside. Yeah. All right, Gray, what do you got for us this week in the hectic college football?
Wow, it was an absolutely crazy and chaos-filled upset weekend in college football. And let's start off with Alabama losing to number six Alabama, losing to number 10 LSU, 32-31 in overtime in Tiger Stadium, Baton Rouge. Obviously, Alabama, their second loss of the year, which, you know, most people would put them out of contention for the college football playoff and possibly out of contention for even the SEC championship, with both of those being SEC losses, and especially loss to the LSU Tigers, who are playing considerably better. Jaden Daniels looks much more comfortable than he did. Obviously, the game tying touchdown in overtime, or almost tying touchdown in overtime before the 2-point conversion play. A really gutsy call by Brian Kelly to go for two there. I absolutely love that call. You know, we're talking pre-show about how overtimes are chaotic now, especially with the new rule starting in the third overtime. You go to, you know, 2-point conversions only. A lot of coaches are now going to, let's just win it right here. Let's know if we can win. We're going to win or lose it on this play right here. It's a really gutsy call. Jane Daniels looked really good. Kayshon Boutte kind of looks like himself now. Mason Taylor, the freshman tight end, he played great. But let's turn our focus on this Alabama team. And I'm going to set y'all up. What seems to be the problem right now for this Alabama team, especially this Alabama offense?
Nathan, you go first.
Well, you know, throughout this weekend, it's been a mix of emotions. Obviously, upset, anger, acceptance. But really, it's stuff we've seen time and time again, especially after, you know, the Texas game, the Texas A&M game, the Tennessee game, and now the LSU game. It's obvious that Bill O'Brien does not know what he's doing as a play caller, and Pete Golding does not know how to game plan for mobile quarterbacks. It was really appalling to me how we did not have a QB spy at all during the game, or if we did, it was not noticeable. It felt like Jaden Daniels had free running room every single time. And then you have other situations where, you know, we have a great pass rush, yet we never see us getting sacks or pressures or anything like that in this game. And honestly, it seemed like Will Anderson was just abysmal. Time and time again, there was receivers just open down the field. Jaden Daniels had plenty of time to make decisions, and really it was just costing us the whole game. And then you go look at the offensive end of things. The only receiver that wants to step up is Ja'Cory Brooks. He had 7 receptions for 97 yards and a touchdown. And, you know, the other main receiving guy being Jahmyr Gibbs. Outside of that, no one wanted to participate, and felt like Bryce Young just had no one to rely on, really. So, you know, going into this Ole Miss game, I think obviously – we can't make any changes in the coaching staff right now, but I think into the offseason, we need to switch things up at both coordinator positions. Alex, what do you think?
Just talking about the defensive end for Alabama, like Nathan said, not a lot of pass rushing from anybody on that team. Considering we have Will Anderson and Dallas Turner, I think there would be more stunts to the inside maybe, or moving them around. I saw one play where Pete Golding actually moved Will Anderson to the opposite side of the line, and he get a sack there or a pressure or something, but he affected the play. And, you know, one would expect, you know, once you see that, you say, hey, maybe you start moving these guys around to get these pressures, because obviously what we're doing isn't working. Also, I'd like to point out, I don't know where Jordan Battle went. Last year, he was like one of the best players on that defense. This year, I had yet to see hear his name be called. DeMarco Helms has really outshined him, even though he fails to tackle majority of the time. But yeah, the defense really lackluster. I thought the DBs played really well. Kool-Aid, McKinstry, Eli Ricks, and Brian Branch really stepped up. It was a failure to get a pass rush. And then the QB spy situation, I just don't understand how you see Jay Daniels, whose really main strength is his rushing ability, and you know, you don't game plan for that, I guess, or succeed at it. You know, on the game winning or game tying touchdown, I guess, to set up to win conversion, there was Dallas Turner on the edge. And I know Dallas Turner is a great athlete, but I don't think he can keep up with Jay Daniels. Need to have Jalen Moody or Henry To'o spying him. Kind of failed at that. And then looking at the offensive side of the ball, once again, Bill O'Brien's play calling abysmal. Ja'Cory Brooks got targeted 17 times. I know that's really way too much for a receiver, I believe. I know Ja'Cory Brooks is talented, but I mean, there's a lot of 5-4-star receivers on that roster. Somebody needs to step up and say, Bill O'Brien, I got this, and come to the game. I mean, Tyler Harrell, I think he's healthy. He played Mississippi State game. I don't know where he's at. He's supposed to be that burner that like Jameson Williams was. I don't know why we don't play him. But, you know, Bryce Young, I really feel bad for him. He has all the talent in the world, and Bill O'Brien just gives him these terrible play calls, I guess. I mean, the best throw he had was he had a scramble outside the pocket and, like, evade, like, 10 pass rushers and throw a dot down the field to Ja'Cory Brooks. But really not impressed with either coordinator. Players didn't execute what they needed to do. But LSU, Brian Kelly, great game plan. Jane Daniels, really impressive.
Yeah, 100%. Very impressive from LSU. LSU looks completely different, and especially Jane Daniels looks a lot more comfortable in the pocket and running the ball than he did even just a few weeks ago, especially, you know, in their game against Tennessee and against Auburn. It didn't look comfortable at all in those games, but now he looks completely different and has set up LSU very, very well for the rest of the season. If they win out, they're in the SEC championship game. So, all right, moving on, we will talk about the Auburn versus Mississippi State game. Mississippi State won this game in overtime as well, 39-33 on a game-winning touchdown run by Jaquavius Marks. Auburn came down from 24-3. It was 24-6 at halftime with interim head coach Cadillac Williams. And outside the outcome of this game, outside, you know, Robbie Ashford going 7 of 22 passing the ball, this is the exact, especially in the second half, the exact kind of game that will that proves that Auburn football is going to be okay. We're going to be okay. Tank Bigsby and Jarquez Hunter were outstanding. Robbie Ashford was unbelievable running the football, scrambling, you know, get himself out of the pocket. The offensive line, you know, outside of Jeremiah Wright, was very, very bad. It was very, very bad. Whoever the next coach is, whether it's Cadillac Williams, whether it's somebody, you know, outside, whether it's whoever, they've got to attack the transfer portal for offensive linemen. Defense, especially in the second half, was outstanding. You know, the pass rush was great. Derek Hall, Kobe Wooden, even guys like Jeffrey Emba, who was the number one JUCO defensive tackle in the country this past year. We have not seen him on the field a lot. He came in and was absolutely dominant. You know, it showed like, he looked a lot like sophomore Derek Brown. That's what I saw in this game from him. The defensive backs played really well. You saw new linebackers like Cam Riley and Barton Lester get a lot of playing time over Owen Papo and Wesley Steiner. Again, defensive backs, Jalen Simpson, J.D. Rim, Nehemiah Pritchett, D.J. James played their guts out. And Auburn finally showed fight. Haven't seen that fight in at least 2 or 3 years. If Brian Harsin was the head coach in this game, we would have lost 45-12.
Most definitely.
We would have quit halfway through the first quarter, and it wouldn't have been close. But I don't know what Cadillac Williams said at halftime. I don't know what he's saying on the sidelines, but it's absolutely working. And it's kind of proven to me that you might want to consider him for the permanent head coaching job. What did y'all see from Auburn in this game that proves that, hey, it's not all bad anymore?
Yeah, I mean, the number one thing was competitiveness. They came out, and even though they got down, they competed and got back in this game. I know they came up short, but it really – they showed hustle, and, like, I was very impressed with Caleb Williams' coaching ability compared to what Brian Harsin had been doing just weeks before. And, you know, after the Penn State game, I really did not think that there was any hope for this team. Not only outside of Brian Harsin being the head coach, but it really didn't seem like the players wanted to be there. Coming out of this game, they really proved that next year is going to be different, and it's going to be really exciting to see who Auburn picks up as a head coach. Alex, what did you think about this game?
I really like the fight, and the Auburn team really showed that they some adversity there. I was really impressed with Cadillac Williams' coaching. Really, really enthusiastic. Makes me want to run through a wall watching him coach. But like Gray said, I think he's a great candidate after that game, even though it's just one game. But if you don't get the somebody like Deion Sanders or Lane Kiffin, I think you look at if Cadillac Williams, continues to be competitive in all these games and show improvement, I think he's really a hire you want to make, because I think he can get recruits to Auburn because he knows what the program's all about, and he's obviously shown he can get players to play for him. But offensively, I mean, even though they scored 33 points, Auburn focused on running the ball more. I think offense still needs a lot of work. Maybe the offensive coordinator needs to look at somebody's offense, like the Ravens and how they use Lamar Jackson. Even though Robbie Ashford's not even close to what Lamar Jackson is. But, that's just something to base off of how to handle that. But really, the rest of Auburn's fight.
Yeah, another thing I want to mention is, these coaches, co-offensive coordinators, Will Friend and Ike Hilliard, who are the offensive line and wide receivers coaches, they got this news on Monday and that they were going to be and then they got the news on Tuesday that they were going to be the co-offensive coordinators. They didn't have time to make their own play sheet. So they were, looking up and down, and they had to memorize the Eric Kiesel and Brian Harsin play sheet and just run through that. This week for Texas A&M, they're going to have a chance to really build out their own game plan and their own play sheet and be able to coach their way instead of just trying to fix Brian Harsin's way. So moving on, the next game we'll talk about is number one Tennessee losing at number three Georgia. 27-13, Georgia looked absolutely dominant in this game in every single facet possible. Simpson Bennett threw for 257 yards and two touchdowns. Ladd McConkey, who looks like an accountant, he has five receptions, 94 yards and a touchdown. I don't know how you let that guy run by you, but I mean, every single team seems to let him run right by you. Hendon Hooker struggled a little bit in this game, only threw for 195 yards, zero touchdowns and one interception. The lowest scoring Tennessee game all year. I think this was Tennessee's, let's humble you a little bit. What did y'all think?
Well, watching this game early, it was the crowd that had the most advantage. They showed up and they showed out, and it was very loud there. But I think the main thing was Stetson Bennett was comfortable in that environment, and he really proved it, scoring that first, long running touchdown. And he was in it. I know one of the big things before this game was that Tennessee fans had leaked his number, and he did his little celebration call me after that he scored that first touchdown, and it really got the crowd into it.
Maybe you should have done that.
But you go look at this Tennessee offense that really struggled to get going. Hendon Hooker did not play his greatest game. I think one of the things that stand out the most is his receivers just couldn't get open most of the time. And with Tennessee's offense, they're really running these vertical burner routes, and if not, they're coming back to the ball. And a lot of times against the defense like Georgia, that just doesn't work. I know Georgia lost a lot of people to the draft last year, and this defense was depleted. But, Kelee Ringo continues to stand out and be a leader for the defense. He had that huge interception in the end zone. So it's really been fun to watch this Georgia team compete against teams like Tennessee. And I think going forward into the SEC championship, because I don't think they lose any games at all, really. So whoever makes it to the SEC championship on the West side is going to have a really tough matchup against this Georgia team.
Yeah,
most definitely. Looking at that game for me, Georgia looks like the team we thought Alabama was going to be at the beginning of the year. We all kind of like not written them off completely, but we were kind of like, this Georgia team's not going to be what they were last year. They lost so many players. But I mean, they're pretty much just as good as that team last year. The defense looks amazing. Makes you wonder what Pete Golding was doing against Tennessee. Georgia obviously game planned really well, Kirby Smart. And I think Will Muschamp's defensive coordinator there now. But yeah, I don't want to blame Tennessee's offense for being lackluster. I think it's just Georgia's defense is that much better. But once again, Stetson Bennett showed what he can do as the quarterback of Georgia. So really impressed with this Georgia as a whole. I mean, Tennessee's not out of the college football playoff completely, but they need a lot of help now.
Yeah, I think it's about time for Stetson Bennett to go get a 9-to-5 job. So some other big games on upset Saturday. Notre Dame knocked off number 4 Clemson 35-14. Number 24 Texas beat number 13 Kansas State 34-27. Florida beat Texas A&M 41-24. Michigan State beat number 16 Illinois 23-15. Kansas beat number 18 Oklahoma State 37-16. Wow, Kansas, that's a big win. Washington beat number 23 Oregon State 24-21. You know, Liberty knocked off Arkansas and Fayetteville 21-19. Pittsburgh beat number 20 Syracuse 19-9. Florida State beat crushed Miami 45-3. And then UTSA beat UAB 44-38 in double overtime. So I'm going to pass it off to Nathan to wrap up some NFL from this past weekend.
All right, our game of the week was Chargers versus Falcons. The Chargers ended up winning 20-17. Justin Herbert was 30 of 43, 245 yards, a touchdown, and one interception. Watching this game, it really was a back-and-forth battle. And with Atlanta, it's not one of those teams where you expect to really be competing at this moment, especially with their quarterback situation. But they find ways to get it done, really. I mean, Cordell Patterson is really someone they rely on a lot. I know quarterback play was not the greatest form with Marcus Mariota, but they were able to keep in this game with their defense. And it really seems like Justin Herbert's been struggling this season overall. So, Gray, watching this game, what do you think of the Chargers, and how can they improve even though they did win this game?
Yeah, even though they did win this game, I think they need to get healthy. Both Keenan Allen and Mike Williams were out in this game at wide receiver. And that takes a lot off of a guy like Justin Herbert. And it puts a lot on guys like Joshua Palmer and Jared Everett. And obviously, just like you said, the Falcons are not a team you go into a game expecting to really, give you a hard time. But if Marcus Mariota is clicking a little bit, they have weapons around him like Kyle Pitts, Drake London, Cordell Patterson, who played a great game, had 2 touchdowns in this game. With his first game back from knee surgery, the Falcons are a good team. The Chargers have got to get healthy. Once they do get healthy, that'll allow Justin Herbert to have his weapons back. Alex, I know, what did you see from the Falcons in this game? Obviously, even though they took the loss at home, some great promise from them.
Just their running game all year has been amazing. Tyler Allgeier has been a great addition for them as a rookie running back at a BYU. Really been impressed with him. Cordell Patterson also, in his first game back from knee surgery, he played really well with his 2 touchdowns. I'm kind of disappointed in the way Arthur Smith's passing the ball. I don't know if it's Marcus Mariota just really can't, the play design's bad, or the receivers aren't getting open. But, they're not getting these playmakers the ball, and it's really kind of – ruining that game, the game for them, kind of making it one dimensional. So Arthur Smith really needs to start trying to feed the ball to these playmakers, because running the ball, people are just start stacking the box and be able to not be able to do nothing. But for the Chargers, Justin Herbert struggling, even though he played kind of well this game, but he's been struggling kind of all year. And then the Chargers defense, terrible, terrible. And you think it'd be a lot better considering their head coach is Brandon Staley, who was the defensive coordinator for the Rams. back in the day. But, you know,
both and teams some of the are, athletes they have,
both teams need a lot of work from either of them to contend for a Super Bowl whatsoever.
And watch out for this upcoming draft. If the Falcons take a good quarterback, that really could fix their offensive issues.
Yeah. Yes.
All right. It's that time of the year.
Finally.
Basketball. So let's go hop right in, shall we?
Let's do it. Let's talk a little bit about the two Alabama teams before we, you know, before we get into it. Obviously, number 15, the Auburn Tigers, coming off defending SEC champions. Obviously, you lose Walker Kessler, you lose Jabari Smith, but you replace them with guys like Chance Westry, Yoan Traore, Trey Donaldson, and Jani Broom. So Auburn has got to find a way to build around their guards this year. I think their forwards are good enough to, you know, play around their guards. Obviously, Wendell Green has to be the guy. He has to be point guard number one. He looks like he needs to take the next step. Obviously, his freshman year last year, he needs to take a Jared Harper type of leap step. You know, the steps that Jared Harper took from his freshman to his junior year, where we went from barely making it out of the SEC tournament to going to the Final Four. He needs to make another jump like that, and I think he will. Need to find a shooter. Need to find an automatic shooter. I think Zeb Jasper and Yoan Traore are your perfect chances of that. You know, Katie Johnson has to find his 3-point shot better. He's going to need to. And then a guy like Alan Flanagan has to be back. He has to look more like sophomore Alan Flanagan. If he does, he could be an all SEC. He could be a second round pick. He just has to look more confident and more explosive than he has. What do y'all think about this Auburn team?
It's definitely young, but they have a lot of talent. And with a coach like Bruce Pearl, if they can get rolling and gain this chemistry throughout the season, they're going to be a dangerous team moving into like the postseason, into March Madness, stuff like that. No, that's a long way away, it seems like. But they gotta find this true leader on the team. And once they do that, I think this team has a lot of promise.
Yeah, they have the talent. I mean, and Bruce Pearl's an amazing head coach. So it's really just putting it all together and making that run.
Yeah, 100%. So moving on, obviously Auburn plays against George Mason on Monday and then South Florida at home on Friday. But moving on to the number 20 team in the country, the Alabama Crimson Tide, they play against Longwood on Monday and Liberty on Friday. You know, they play against a bad team Monday and a better team on Friday. That seems to be a state thing. But obviously for this team, I think Javon Quinterly needs to be the guy. I think he needs to be very, very consistent. I think he has to turn into the point guard one role that, you know, he's been in before. He just has to stay that way. He's got to be consistent, especially with his 3-point shot. And then you've got to build around a guy like Brandon Miller. I think he is as good as anybody has ever come through Alabama basketball. I think if you build around him, and you know Charles Bediako and Noah Gurley, they can dominate on the inside. I think this Alabama team has a chance to be one of the top in the SEC, as well as Auburn, Kentucky, Arkansas, and Tennessee.
Yeah, you want to talk about talent. This Alabama team is very talented. Just like Auburn, it's still very young, though. So relying on a veteran leader in Javon Quinterly coming off this injury against Notre Dame in March Madness, he really needs to be this big leader. He needs to, you know, help build chemistry between everyone. And I know I've seen over the past few weeks that Nick Saban – oh my gosh, I'm so comfortable right now. As you see, it just looms in my mind. But there's been a lot of, you know, pushing and shoving, and people are ready to go play other people. I mean, they're angry. They want to have some success against other teams, and they'll get their shot coming up here soon. So it'll be really interesting to see how number one they perform on the offensive end, you know, with how 3-point shooting took a dip last season. But going on to like the defensive side with Charles Bediako, he really needs to be this huge rim protector for him. And he had moments where he shined last season, but you know, he is undersized a little bit on the weight end. So it's really about how he uses his length. And I think he can be really successful if he does it properly. Alex, what do you think?
I think Nate Oates did a great job attacking the transfer portal and recruiting this year. I mean, this is a really deep Alabama team. They got a lot of good freshmen. Like Gray said, Brandon Miller, Jaden Bradley are really two of the big ones. Nick Pringle also. And they he went out and got Mark Sears from the transfer portal and Dom Welch as well. And then he had Namari Burnett from last year. It's really a deep team, and I think it's really poised for a run. I want to see, like Nathan said, Javon Quinterly take that leadership role, and hopefully there's some big things for Alabama this year.
Yeah, 100%. I think both Auburn and Alabama are very similar spots, both with point guards that have to take that leadership and point guard one type of role and next step, both with very talented freshmen, both are very young, but both also have the chance to be very, very dominant in a lot of games and really make a run in either way this season. Let's talk about some predictions. First, let's start with the Naismith Player of the Year. Obviously, one of the first times in a long time that the Naismith Player of the Year from last year, Kentucky center Oscar Tshiebwe, is returning. Who do y'all see? Who do y'all identifying for this year, possibly taking that award?
Ooh, you know, it's really between two players, in my opinion. I think Armando Bacot is one of the biggest players right now, but, you know, you can't really ignore Oscar Tshiebwe and his ability to grab boards and be an impact on defense. So between the two right now, I really like Oscar Tshiebwe to take the Naismith Player of the Year award. Alex, what do you think?
Two words, Armando Bacot.
Yes, yes, yes. I 100% agree. I think it's between Armando Bacot, Oscar Tshiebwe. But another guy that really should watch out for, and this is the only guard I think that really could be in the conversation for something like this, because I think the only other guy is like Drew Timmy. But the only guard I would think would have a contention for the Naismith Player of the Year is Marcus Sasser from Houston. If he takes that next step, I think he could be, you know, a top pick in the draft just by the impact that he makes at Houston. So you'd be able to watch out for those guys, obviously. Bacot at North Carolina, Sasser at Houston, and Tshiebwe from Kentucky. Talk about the national champion. Obviously, it's a long time from now. The national champion, the Final Four will be played in April, the beginning of April. So it's a long time from now. But who are y'all predicting right now? Who's your national champion?
North Carolina.
That's very hard to do right now. There's so many good teams, and I haven't seen anyone play yet. I don't know what kind of product they're going to put out. So, you know, I'm kind of looking into this kind of
just in North Carolina.
Man, as much as I would like to, I really think that Kentucky is going to be a really good team this year. I think they can be national champions with play behind Oscar Tshiebwe. And I know you're not going to like that.
No, they're losing St. Peter's in the first round.
That was last year.
North Carolina is the national champion. They brought back everybody except for Brady Manick and then replaced him with Pete Nance. So, yeah, that's it. Alex, you want to talk about some of our games of the week for this upcoming weekend?
Yeah, this weekend for college football, you have Alabama versus Ole Miss, LSU versus Arkansas, UCF versus Tulane, Georgia versus Mississippi State, Auburn versus Texas A&M, and our game of the week, TCU versus Texas. And then for the NFL for this upcoming weekend, you got the Seahawks versus Buccaneers, Vikings versus Bills, Jaguars versus Chiefs, the Saints versus the Steelers, Cardinals versus Rams, and then our game of the week, Cowboys versus Packers.
Love it.
All right.
Love it. Love that game.
Wow, big game right there.
Yeah, nice. It is.
I'd like to mention also on this Tuesday, November 8th at 6 p.m., the CFP will be releasing their rankings. Tonight on our social medias, you can find our rankings on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. All right. That's all the time we have today. Thank you for listening to Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.